I'm delighted now to welcome back to the Radio Cafe, Michael McGarrity. His new book is called Backlands. It just came out in paperback, and he will be speaking at Collected Works Bookstore this coming Monday, the 4th of May at 6 in the evening. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Well, Mary Charlotte, it's always a delight to be with you and to see you, and see you looking so well and happy.
It's an annual tradition that you come here every time you got a new book.
Yeah, more or less annual. It's been a couple of years, I think, since I've been here last, but it's always a pleasure.
And Backlands came out in hardcover a year ago and is in paperback now. It's the middle child in a trilogy.
Yeah.
The first one was called Hard Country, and for those of our listeners who are familiar with Michael McGarrity's other books, many, many crime novels starring a law enforcement officer called Kevin Kearney, and these are the ancestors of Kearney.
That's right. This is the family story. It's covering four generations and 100 years of history, all set in New Mexico. And I'm deep into the third book in the trilogy, which is called The Last Ranch. And interestingly, for those people who are looking forward to that book, the paperback edition of Backlands comes with chapter one of The Last Ranch. So people can get a preview, if you will, of what opens in the last book in the trilogy.
That's very cool. Does it mean you can't change anything?
No, I can't. I can change. I don't think I'll want to change much, but if there are some grammatical or other kind of punctuation errors, I'll probably correct them before it comes out next year. The third book is due for publication in June of next year.
A lot of times I've heard from writers when they've got a protagonist in their novel or a character in their novel, there's a backstory to that character, and even though it doesn't necessarily emerge in the book, the author kind of draws on that to paint the character and who he is. Did you have a backstory for Kevin Kearney when you were writing those novels?
Yeah, and it kept showing up in each and every novel, and now I'm at the point where I have to do internal fact-checking against myself to make sure that I'm not too far off base from what I've written about this guy's background in 12 crime novels. And in certain cases, I have to make an arbitrary decision that says that, well, not all facts are written in stone, so I can play a little bit loose with some of the things that I've written about in terms of backstory, especially the earlier stuff about his family coming to New Mexico. But what's interesting, and now that I'm into the third book, The Last Ranch, I'm facing more recent history that I've got to, for the sake of consistency, manipulate a little bit in terms of the backstory that I wrote about in book 6 of the crime series or book 9 of the crime series. So it's making for some interesting revisionism.
That is very interesting indeed. Now, do you have any obsessive fans who keep track of that kind of stuff?
Well, there's always nitpickers out there.
Yeah.
Right. There were a couple of really embarrassing copy editing goofs in Backlands that I refuse to tell anybody about. If they find them, I hear about it. But I've yet to write a perfect book, Mary Charlotte. I don't know anybody who has.
Yeah, I think perfection is something that is pretty hard to strive for, especially when you're getting up into 500 pages. I mean, these are long books that cover a lot of ground in, not so much in space, because it's all New Mexico, but definitely in time.
Yeah.
And this one starts in around, what, 1920 or so?
1920, just after World War I begins there.
And goes well into World War II. And in a way, it's kind of a history of the early 20th century in New Mexico. And, you know, we see the Great Depression, we see the advancement of technology, and we talked about that in your last book. I mean, the incredibly rough life that people live trying to scratch out a living on the land here, and now we've got trucks and we've got electricity, and these are great things. You see the Civilian Conservation Corps, you see World War II, and in all these things, it's all about the way they touched New Mexico.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had to probably drop about 90% of all the research that I've done and that I'm doing, simply because this is such a rich century, if you will, of history, both locally and nationally and worldwide. And I just couldn't put everything in. So there had to be some selective decision-making on my part as to what was pertinent to our time and place, New Mexico's time and place. And certainly the Great Depression, the stock market crash, the Civilian Conservation Corps, the drought, the start of World War II, and into the middle of World War II, because really, Backlands ends way before World War II does. So making some selective decisions about what I wanted to write about and what I wanted this family to experience was very important. One of the things, for example, that I'm dealing with right now is a seven-year drought that started in 1950 and didn't end until 1957. And what's interesting about that is that mostly the national news reported it as a Texas drought, right? And it wasn't just a Texas drought, of course. It was a drought that affected New Mexico desperately and really forced a lot of ranchers permanently off their ranches forever. But looking at that and trying to somehow compress it so that you don't spend too much time on it is not necessarily an easy task. It's something that you have to do with a certain amount minimalism, if you will. But all of that, I think, informs my writing in so much as I'm able to take those critical events and then put them in a personal perspective for the characters that I have on the page that are living in that time and experiencing what's happening to the world, to them personally, on the land.
And also changing mores, particularly around sexuality. I mean, you have women of interesting, you don't want to say compromised virtue, because they are actually, it seems like one of the early generations of women who's taking its sexuality into their own hands.
Yes. I have been complimented on my female characters by women, which has been really a great compliment to me that
yes,
I appreciate.
Yes, I join them. I join your complimenters. I love these strong ladies.
And the idea of the sexual revolution somehow just beginning in the 1960s is malarkey, because really the flapper generation and the jazz age of the 20s liberated women in ways that they had never had before. I mean, they had just literally won the right to vote in the early part of the 20th century. So until that point, they were really considered to be property of their husbands. And all of a sudden, the jazz age came along, and the economy was booming after World War I, and a whole attitude that began to empower women grew from that. Now, on top of that, I had to draw characters that went against the stereotype of the supposedly frontier woman, the housewife who swept the floors and took care of the chickens while the men did all the work, because that's just pure fantasy. Women coming west and settling the country west of the Mississippi made as much of a contribution, in some cases more, than their male counterparts in terms of creating a civilized society and doing all the work that a man could do on a ranch or a farm. So all of those things coalesce into something that is liberating, for women. And I think it was the antecedent to what later became the love generation, if you will, of the 1960s, which, by the way, wasn't all-inclusive, did not include everybody. You know, there were a certain percentage of the population that was part of that whole thing, but the great majority of America was not part of it.
Right. And I mean, in your book, we've got, and it's interesting to have a book be the center book of a trilogy, because you're building on the first book, and then you're leaving us with, for example, the female character who you introduce toward the end of the book, very charismatic, and I believe we will see more of her.
Fiercely independent. I think she says to him early, she says to my protagonist in the book, Matthew Kearney, she says to him early on that she only takes one lover at a time. And when he questions her about that, she explains herself, I think, very clearly, that this is basically her form of morality. This is her form of appropriate behavior. This is what she believes in. And it kind of throws him for a loop. You know, he's not used to that. And I think even today, a lot of men wouldn't be used to it. So she's an extraordinary character. I do have to tell you one thing about Backland, Backlands that you may not know. It was a finalist for the Spur Award from the National Western Writers of America. So that was very nice to that it was chosen as a finalist.
Very much so. The Spur Award, and there's a lot about, of course, in the book about ranchers and ranching and what it takes to keep a ranch healthy, what it takes to keep a ranch economically viable in that time, dealing with Mustangs and the vicissitudes of trying to break or gentle horses. And I wondered, I mean, is this something in your own family background?
Well, I grew up with horses, and I'm a country boy, and I've been a New Mexican for so long now that, you know, I think I've got it somehow in my blood. And I have a great connection with the ranching community in New Mexico, which is still basically not much different than it was 100 years ago or more. And then you throw in my research and all of the travel that I've done to learn about places and to get a feeling for the environment and get a feeling for the natural setting. And I think it all works out so that I can tell a story in a fairly authentic way. That's not to say I don't make my mistakes. We were talking earlier about the fact that, you know, I get fact-checked a lot by readers who will point out my little errors. There are some people who are much better horsemen than I am, and horsewomen, who will tell me when I get it wrong. And I really mostly enjoy the kind of critique because it helps improve my sensibility, whether it's about horses or it's about a place or it's about certain characters. So it all works to my advantage, and it tells me that people, I think, take my writing seriously, and I really appreciate that.
Take it seriously and read it closely. And yeah, that kind of close reading, I suppose, is tremendously complimentary, and I mean that's what you want.
That's what I want. I have people tell me that they can never find my books in used bookstores, which I find very complimentary, because it may mean that people are holding on to them, you know, as opposed to recycling them. So.
Right. Now, we're talking to Michael McGarrity about his new book, Backlands. And, I mean, we started out talking about Kevin Kearney, who we know from the books where he is solving crimes. And this is a whole different world that we see in Backlands of law enforcement. I mean, you know, back in the day, you could kill a hired hand who was threatening you or trying to steal from you, dispose of the body, and deal with it later, yeah. Only if necessary.
Only if necessary. That was interesting to have to back up from my experience in law enforcement, which is modern era, and take a look seriously at how crime was dealt with 100 or more years ago, and how law enforcement did their job. And one of the things that's true from that era is that loyalty and personal friendship often had a hell of a lot more to do with how crimes did or didn't get solved than the letter of the law or the application of the law onto citizens generally. So, for example, George Curry, who was governor and of the Philippines and a Lincoln County sheriff, and in the Rough Riders was friends with Oliver Lee. This is from Hard Country. And so George Curry decided that he could protect Oliver Lee from being accused of having killed Albert Jennings Fountain by saying that he had a conversation with a certain individual who had told him that he had killed Albert Jennings Fountain or was on his way to kill Albert Jennings Fountain. So it was all tied into friendship, loyalty, sometimes personal gain or profit or business dealings or cattle wrestling or whatever. That was much more of a greater impact than the law. I mean, people would get acquitted of murder when it was clear that they had outright killed somebody, right? And still acquitted by a jury. Today, that's certainly not the way it goes.
Except sometimes.
Except sometimes.
George Zimmerman.
Yeah, George Zimmerman.
And it's also true that the science of forensics in the time that you're writing about was really relatively new and probably hadn't made its way to New Mexico.
No fingerprints, no police cars with radios in them, no computers, no national crime databases, no telephones, basically. It was completely different.
So you have written these two books and your loyal readers are waiting with bated breath for the third one. That book will be out in June of next year. Now, after that, I know it's a ways off, but are you going to go back to writing Kevin Kearney novels?
Well, let me talk a little bit first about the trilogy.
Okay.
I don't think anybody has ever done a prequel trilogy before. There have been these prequel books that will talk about a protagonist's early life or usually one volume book. So I embarked on some rather groundbreaking adventures here by trying to create a trilogy. Now, on top of that, to answer your question, it may turn into a quartet because I'm thinking that after I finish the trilogy, it would be really very interesting to write a story that gives the reader a sense of what happened to Kearney that made him want to change his life and become a cop.
Uh-huh.
And so it could actually, I've been calling it the Tularosa Trilogy, but it may wind up being the Tularosa Quartet, which would be a lot of fun. So I've got the story in the back of my head. It's there, ready to be accessed once I finish The Last Ranch. But, first things first.
I've always wanted to ask you, and have never done so, whether Kevin Kearney, to some extent, is you.
I've got a stock answer for that, and I've been using it for years, and I'll use it again, and
All right.
I'll talk a little bit more. He's younger, taller, better looking, and smarter than I am. That being said, I don't see how any writer cannot step completely aside from who they are in the creation of a story. Now, that being said, Kearney isn't me. Am I to be found? Are parts of my life to be found? Are other people that I've known to be found? Sprinkled here and there, perhaps, throughout these 14 books? 14 and a half now? Yeah, sure. In terms of attitude, for example, in terms of outlook on the world, in terms of a philosophical underpinning. I don't think a writer can step away from that. I think that's impossible. On the other hand, can you draw whole cloth fictional characters? Yeah, sure, you can do that too. But peppered throughout, especially the trilogy, are parts of me.
What do you mean by that when you say that?
Well, I'll tell you instead, I'll answer it this way. Most writers do the stock dedication when they write a book. They want to thank their significant other. They want to thank their family and friends. They want to thank particularly their agent and their editor. And that's what they do. I'm already working on the dedication to my book, The Last Ranch. And so far, it's a page and a half of people right? Now, I'm not saying basically who they are in terms of how they touch my life, but anybody who knows me well is going to be able to figure out that I'm talking specifically about the influences that people have had on me over three quarters of a century, because, you know, that's how old I am. With that being said, I think people are going to find the dedication interesting and perhaps informative in terms of asking some questions of, well, who the hell is this McGarrity guy, you know? I don't know. That might give them an answer or two there.
All right.
That's kind of a oblique answer to your question, Mary Charlotte, but that's the best you're going to get.
We're talking to Michael McGarrity about his new book, Badlands. And the father and son, Patrick and Matthew Kearney, are the through line of this current book, and we know we'll be seeing more of Matthew in books to come. And presumably he will reproduce, because Kevin's got to come from somewhere. But he's also, I mean, there were moments where I thought, he's just too cool to be true. He's a really good guy.
Matthew is. Point counterpoint in terms of looking at his father, who's not a really good guy.
Yeah.
But I took a big risk when I created Patrick in Hard Country and in Backlands, because he has a personality that really sucks and has very few redeeming features. And that is not an easy thing to create, a character like that who can keep the reader's attention. And I think I've been able to do that. And by God, the old codger's beginning to soften a bit and show more of a human side to him. And it's been fun to do that with him. Matthew, how can you not like Matthew? I mean, he's just this tough, sensitive, intelligent kid who grows up in an environment and copes with it in remarkably mature ways throughout his early years.
And multi-talented and very, very smart.
Yeah, he is. He's good. And the supporting cast in Backlands, I think, is marvelous. I'm very happy with every character I've put on the page in this book. I think they all work very well. The women characters are exceptional. They just resonate, and people have asked me, well, where do you get that from? And I said, well, I get that from being drawn to these kind of women to begin with, being raised by one of them, surrounding myself with women who are that way, and being able to recognize, how lucky I've been to have those experiences with women like that, that I can use creatively.
Yeah, come to think of it, there's a remarkable lack of either simpering or abrasive females in this book.
Yeah.
Thanks.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Now, I do want to, if you have a minute, I do want to talk about something that I'm going to do at the book signing that I think people are going to find interesting. 19 years and 14 books, and I have done perhaps four readings in that time.
Really?
Readings, yes, readings. Actual readings of excerpts from my book.
You don't like reading
aloud? Don't like them. But I'm going to read on Monday night. And here's what I'm going to do. I am going to ask Dorothy Massey, the owner of Collected Works, to pass out a few copies of Backlands to people in the audience. I'm then going to ask the people who have them to open the book to any page they choose, and I will read from that page. And the reason I'm doing this, Mary Charlotte, is because I believe that I know how hard it is to write a book. I know how hard it is to try to get every word right, every sentence right, everything just the way you want it. And if I do my job correctly as a writer, I don't have to give a backstory. I don't have to give a detailed character analysis. I don't have to tell people what comes before. All I have to do is open the book and read a paragraph or two. And if I've done my job right, people are going to enjoy it regardless of whether they know anything from before or anything after. So it's going to be kind of a fun thing to do.
Yes,
I've done it once before, and I've decided I'm going to do it again.
It worked out well?
It did work out well. So this will be my, in 19 years, this will be my fourth reading, probably.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
One of the things that I was thinking about as I was reading it, and I partially listened to it too. I'm getting into audiobooks.
Good for
and
you.
There's a nice reader of your
book. Oh, I know.
Book.
Yeah, he's won every award possible as a reader of books,
yeah.
As a narrative.
Yeah. And I mean, when you listen that way, but also when you read it on the page, you hear the accents to some extent. Mm-hmm. You hear the language. And I thought it was interesting that it seems like you put an awful lot of attention toward making sure that the language was authentic to its time.
To the extent that you can't use certain words if they didn't exist in 1920 or
exactly.
1910, you know. And how people expressed themselves prior to the electronic world enveloping us was completely different than how we talk to each other today in terms of how we greet each other, how we ask after each other. All of those things had to be within the framework of authentic language. And then there's the slang that you have to be aware of, both national and regional slang that gets used, and you want to use that correctly. One of my favorite words that I have, I think young Matthew or one of his friends, or maybe more of his friends use, is the word swell. You know, and you don't hear people saying swell anymore. You don't hear people saying that's swell.
There was a period where it came back. It was like a retro expression
yeah,
that
was.
People were saying.
Yeah, I know. But it really has had its day and has kind of faded away again. So how you use how your characters use language, how they express themselves, it's as much a part of the research for writing an authentic historical novel as anything else.
Many readers, including me, have this experience when they finish a book that their friends have left the house and they're not coming back.
That's a great way to express it.
And I wondered if you have that feeling also as an author.
No, I don't. Because characters can surprise me. And I can think that I'm done with them, and then I find that I'm not. And that's been true in the trilogy, and it was also true in some of my crime novels, too, where a character would kind of knock on my mental door and say, you know, you're really not finished with me, McGarrity. I need an encore here. And so the only thing that I can do to answer your question is something that I've just recently been able to put together in a certain articulation. And it's been true ever since my debut novel, Tularosa, came out in 1996. And that is this. Every book I write is my first and my last book. I've never assumed anything other than that every book has been just as hard to start and just as difficult to bring to a conclusion. And there's never been this anticipation that there was more out there right away. Yeah, there's stories that bubble in my head, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they're ever going to get translated into a book, into a novel. So every book is my first and my last.
Which is funny when you're writing a trilogy.
Yeah, I know. It's scary. It's more than funny. It's scary because with this trilogy especially, I would finish Hard Country, and then I would say, how the hell am I going to write Backlands, you know? How am I going to start it? Where is it going to begin? I finished Backlands, and, you know, it came out in hardback last year, and now it's out in soft cover this year. But last year, when I was looking to begin The Last Ranch, I went through the same thing again. I guess there are writers that it's just a lot easier for. But for me, it's always a challenge. It's always a quandary. It's always a climb up a mountain.
It's funny. It doesn't get easier over the years, over the decades.
I don't think it should, actually. To be honest with you, I do not want to be, if an obituary, is positive obituary is me, is written, I don't want it to say something, oh, and he wrote 50 of these and 40 of those, and he had 120 short stories and all of that. I've never wanted that. I've wanted to tell really good stories the best way I knew how, and not worry about quantity, but concentrate on quality.
We're talking to Michael McGarrity about his new book, Backlands, and you are going to be getting a Lifetime Achievement Award next month.
Next month, in May. I'm going to receive the Frank Waters Literary Lifetime Achievement Award in Colorado Springs. It was established in the last century, and the first recipient was Frank Waters. Now, many people who are familiar with Southwestern literature would know him particularly from his most famous book, The Man Who Killed the Deer. But over the years, people such as Margaret Cole and Rudolfo Anaya and Scott Momaday and Tony Hillerman and many other people have received this award. And so I'm feeling quite honored to join that cadre of writers. So I'll be traveling up to Colorado Springs in May for a luncheon, an awards luncheon, and a celebration. And I'm really touched because this is not an award that you apply for. It's an award that you're given. And that means a lot to me.
Michael McGarrity is author of many books. His newest is called Backlands. It just came out in paperback, and he will be speaking at Collected Works Bookstore on Monday, May 4th at 6 in the evening right here in Santa Fe. Thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte. It's always a delight to be with you. It's always fun.